Stop! Stop!
Stop!
Oh, the idiot thinks we're waving to him. Stop! Stop!
That's William, the fireman.
I don't care who it is. Stop it.
Right. Stop! He's stopping.
About time, too.
Jump in, sir. Jump in. The devil's getting coming.
William,
a little bit more
sleeve. Which way would you be wanting to go, sir?
Well, that's most accommodating of you, but I don't really wish to go either way. As a matter of fact, what I want is a word with you about your grandmother. If you could spare the time, that is to say.
Well, we're running nicely to time, and it's wonderful the head of steam William can get up if we're a bit late. So go right ahead. Signals up on grandmother, sir, right down the line.
Do you remember your grandfather?
Oy, that I do. It was grandfather that started me off.
Started you off?
Gave me the Wonder Book of Trains. After that, I never looked back.
And your grandfather, was he a great reader?
Oh, he was that. Always had his nose in a book. Always to Ravens in particular.
Ranulph?
That's the man, sir.
And your grandmother?
Oh, no, sir. She weren't given to book learning. Oh, she'd quite enough to keep her occupied.
See?
Oh, she'd known a thing or two before she met Grandpa. And not just any rag, tag and bobtail either. She were known to best of the gentry.
Was she, sir?
And even after she married my Grandpa, there was no knowing what she'd be up to. Off and away for days on end she were. But that didn't worry my old Grandpa. He'd sit by the fire with his book and never turn a hair. And even when everyone reckoned she ought to be turning her mind to higher things, she was off every night to Burdock's Dingle.
Burdock's Dingle?
The lover's lane hereabouts.
She'd hide herself in the bushes with a bottle of gin and get a regular eye full of her carryings on. They reckon that was how she met her end.
How do you mean?
Well, it were Maggie Trout and Great John Vetch, you see, the boy from the stud farm. At his like rabbits they were every night.
Do we really?
And old Grammer just couldn't take her eyes off them. Well, a great storm comes up and she gets soaked to the skin. Or so they say. And what with the gin and the rain and her losing her way and the fact that someone had left off the cover to the well. And do you know, when they fetched her out the well, she still had that bottle of gin in her hand. They couldn't wrest it from her. Rigor
mortis. Tell me, did you ever have any dealings with an old fellow called Hayho?
Oh, I know one. Surly old bastard.
Bastard?
Bastard? Old bastard? Well, I don't know as to that.
He is dead, as a matter of fact. Ooh. Somebody buried him in a snowdrift last night. Saturn, so to speak.
Saturn? More snow coming. William and me are like to have the snowplow out come Wednesday. Come and see us if you're anywhere near the line.
Yes, I'll make a point of it. But this Hayho...
Oh, shameless old brute. My old grandma used to keep an eye out for ye. Especially when you were living on that wench over at Sue Way, before the hussy married t'other fella. Hayho and his Anna was a regular scandal about these parts, so I've been told.
Anna? Do you mean the woman who's now Anna Hoobin?
That's right. And didn't you say something about bastards? Well, there you are. Hannah Hoobin's boy, the halfway that is this dirty old Hayho's son. And now, if it's all the same with you, sir, we'd best be getting on. Stoke up, William.
Right.
Well, thank you. You've been a great help.
Don't forget to come and see the snowplow on Wednesday.
Where now?
I think it's time we had a word with Hannah Hoobin. And if possible, take in old Mrs. Ulstrup on the way.
Old Mrs. Ulstrup?
The woman who milked the marble cow. Well, what do you make of it all?
Very much what I was beginning to make of it before. It's all starting to tie up, and it all seems to lead back to your friends at Dream Manor.
My friends? At midday yesterday, I didn't as much know that any of these Ravens existed.
But Billy Bidewell says...
Oh, bother Billy Bidewell for a great gossiping booby. If I were in your shoes, Inspector, instead of lending an ear to local gossip, I'd be more worried about troubles on my own doorstep.
How do you mean?
I mean the little matter of Hannah Hoobin's boy. Do you realize that this boy, a helpless idiot boy, disappeared quite a while ago and that you've done virtually nothing about it? It's very bad, Inspector, very bad. Colonel Pike may protect you to some extent, but I fear the Home Secretary will take a serious view of it. Let us hope that Hannah Hoobin's boy is alive after all. Oh, I am sorry. You must forgive my tension, as my nerves are very bad. I seem to be in the midst of a series of jokes. I get off a train last night at a station incidentally called Appleby's End, and immediately stepped into a freakish universe in which such a coincidence will most assuredly not pass unexploited. But what we've got to sort out, Inspector, is what all this nonsense really adds up to, and which fragments we should be giving our attention to.
I don't see what you're getting at.
Suppose your criminal wants to do something uncommonly odd and not be found out. The difficulty is clear. Oddity almost automatically betrays itself. The needle gleams in the haystack and can't possibly be missed.
Talking of haystacks...
So, what you do is to stuff the haystack full of needles. You see? Oddity wherever the perplexed investigator turns. And just one of these queer happenings maybe makes sense.
Talking of haystacks, Mr. Appleby, what if it all revolves round this Appleby's End business? Figure it, that someone wanted to get you down to this district, Mr. Appleby, and do something uncommonly odd. This person creates a whole bunch of queer doings, and you're brought down by the yard on the strength of them. Then suppose that something equally queer happens to you, like Sir Mulberry's pig or Hannah Hoobin's boy. You follow?
I follow.
Billy Bidewell says that some of those ravens are uncommonly interested in you. You're sure you've no connection with any of them before? Suppose that some previous case of yours had resulted in bringing a friend or relation of theirs to the gallows, and vengeance had been sworn.
Good heavens, you speak with the voice of old Ranulph Raven himself. This is just, I imagine, how his yarn-spinning mind works.
Oh, that's just it. Something in the blood, you might say. Take this Miss Judith, for instance.
I haven't had the opportunity for much conversation with Miss Raven, but I do not think it would misrepresent the situation to say that she and I are engaged.
Engaged?
That's how I see the matter.
You know, it is a confusing affair. At times I almost think you're concerned to keep it so.
My dear fellow, one gets these fancies after a long day.
I suppose that's it. Well... here's the next needle in the haystack. Old Mrs. Ostrom.
Ah, of the marble cow. Note the clerical hat in the porch, Inspector. Mrs. Ostrom is doubtless in process of receiving religious advice.
Kettle's just on the boil. Did you hear? Come in. Come in. The door is open.
Smith is my name. And this is Hodge, my cat. I was just about to butter the buns.
Perhaps I should explain.
At a guess, I should say that you were a couple of policemen come to inquire into a theft of poultry.
You are quite right about our calling. This is Inspector Mutlow of the Yatter Police. My name is Appleby, and I am a detective inspector from Scotland Yard.
Can you butter scones?
Well, I...
Capital. Both halves, if you please, and don't stick them together again. Mrs. Alstrop is naturally something of a connoisseur in butter. Mr. Mutlow, I will trouble you to put that plum cake on a plate. The plate with the cow. This sacred animal is, as you can observe, everywhere in evidence. Milkers on the mantelpiece. Two china cows from the old dairy at Box's Bottom. The oreographs are after the manner of Keep.
Can you tell me if all this is a recent development with Mrs. Ostrom?
Oh, dear me, no. It is innate,
Mr. Appleby.
Nor virtually so. As the Roman twins were suckled by a she-wolf, I have sometimes supposed that Mrs. Ostrom must have been suckled by a Frisian. Or a Jersey. And ever since girlhood, she has been celebrated in this part of the countryside for her skill in vax emulgence.
I gathered she has been a milkmaid.
Capital! I think I hear Mrs. Alstrop coming from her room. Inspector Mutlow, be so kind as to open the door.
Oh, right.
Excellent. Come along, my good soul. Admirably buttered scones, and not at all a bad plum cake. Coop. 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 Admirable. A cup of tea.
what might be termed a vacillating nature.
I understood that the disorder we are witnessing had its origin quite recently in a distressing experience to which Mrs. Alstrop was subjected at Tiffin Place. But it appears from what you say and from the decorations and embellishments of the house...
Quite so. Mrs. Alstrop's misfortune, for so I suppose we must regard it, has been much exacerbated since her return from Tiffin Place. She hadn't been there a week before she was back here with some tale about a cow that had been turned to marble in the night.
That's true.
True? Oh, dear me. Could it be some prank of the stable lads? But no. To me, at least, it suggests a somewhat more sophisticated mind.
There have been other odd happenings. Did you hear about Hannah Hubin's boy?
Didn't like his work at Tiffin Place and left the district. That's what I was told.
Hannah Hubin's boy did not leave the district. He was changed into a waxwork.
A waxwork? It probably came from Dream Manor. That's where they have poor old Bishop Adolphus' collection. And, oh, dear me, how the life of pastoral care dulls one's wits. The marble cow is doubtless from Dream, too, and will be one of Theodore Raven's amiable ineptitudes. The plot thickens, Mr. Appleby. Or shall we say, solidifies.
You seem pretty quick at the bearings of all this, sir. Quite on the spot, you might say.
Oh, thank you, Inspector, thank you. I chanced to know the Ravens quite well. I must have been one of the first to hear the strange news of the man Hato this morning. And I fear that his fate tacks on to other untoward matters a dream. A strange place. I never knew the old squire, who died long before my present incumbency here. But the whole affair does remind me of one of his stories.
You mean one specific story?
No, more than a stray thought. I have no clear memory of one of his stories as distinct from another. I was thinking of the commonplace melodrama which is the basis of most of his novels. Lost heirs and missing wills and clandestine marriages, Mr. Appleby. And that sort of thing.
It's getting dark. Shouldn't we light the lamps?
Oh, no, Inspector. It's soothing to sit in the flickering firelight.
I am staying with the Ravens simply because I made their acquaintance quite fortuitously last night. I suppose you know them fairly well.
Everard Raven and Miss Clarissa, who I believe is only a distant relation, are among the most regular of my congregation. As to the others...
Oh, he's been eating my cake. Who's done it? Who's been and pinched my cake?
Oh, it's gone all right.
Sure, she didn't eat it herself.
Mm. Quite sure she left it on that plate there.
It's got so dark, perhaps it's fallen onto the floor.
I'll light the lamp.
Well, look, better bring the lamp over here and look for it, because Alstrop seems quite upset.
Oh, nothing at all. Must have been mice.
Nonsense. Mice can't make away with a sizable piece of plum cake.
Well, at any rate, it's gone. Where's Mr. Smith? Nothing, blessed. I thought he was a queer customer. Who'd have thought he'd have made off with a piece of plum cake?
My dear man, it was his own cake.
Oh, Mr. And not for the first time. Got away with the capital selection of Izumi, too.
Selection of what?
We are in the presence of sorcery.
Sorcery of all the damn nonsense.
Do not swear, sir. Sorcery, Mr. Appleby. It is not, of course, so common as witchcraft proper, but it does turn up from time to time.
What exactly do you have in mind?
I saw her hand come in at the door, and then she snatched the cake. Of course, she must have been watching and waiting, so she knew who had been eating it. The fragment of cake would, of course, according to the laws of sorcery, bring Mrs. Alstrop within the malign power of the sorcerer's art.
You speak of all this, sir, in a somewhat equivocal way. Do I understand you to believe in the theory of sorcery?
My dear Mr. Appleby, as to whether sorcery is effective, we don't know, and it would be pointless to inquire. By the way, are you fond of beagling?
Beagling? I've been out with beagles from time to time.
Ah. It occurred to me to wonder whether you were familiar with the habits of hare.
And what would you be thinking of that old parson, Mr. Appleby? Bit touched, if you ask me. Sorcery, indeed.
I agree with you about sorcery, but as for Mr. Smith, I would describe him as intelligent,
learned and impulsive, and possibly as being wise as well. He was curiously evasive about Ranald's stories. It was as if he'd started something and suddenly thought better of it. Did you ever read any of his books, Inspector?
Yes. Mother had some books of his, and I remember reading a story or two sometimes on Sundays when it was wet.
Did you ever read Paxton's Destined Hour?
No.
Or The Coach of Cacus?
Can't say I did. I remember reading one called The Medusa's Head.
Called what?
The Medusa's Head. I don't know why. It was about a family portrait that seemed to have the power of paralyzing any living creature that looked at it. First it was the owner's canaries, which had been hung in a window in the picture gallery. Then it was his dog. It was found staring at the picture, cold and stiff as a statue. And then the owner's wife was found there, staring at the thing, and, as you might say, turned to stone.
I see. And would you say that it was interesting?
Interesting? How could it be interesting? Just a lot of rubbish in a book. Well, here we are. Who bins?
Take a more in your ugly
mug to
take.
Go down,
inside!
Come on,
you know,
I have a chicken.
Yes, here is it, and a mite too soon.
What's going on?
Come in and turn the big man out.
What big man? What are you talking about?
The big man, squirrel. He'd be trying to steal my pig. Turn him out. Come on. They're out in the yard.
All right, come on up.
See this,
Arthur?
You've got the law on you, and you know it. Give it up or pay the money now. I'll have you before the sessions. I'll have you jailed.
No, come,
then I'll take them back for myself.
No, keep the hands off him.
Now then, let's have a look at that order, Brettenham Skirl.
It's all done according to the law of all the magistrate.
And where's the pig?
No,
there he is, in the sty. Here, hark at him.
No, there's no doubt about it, Hoobin. You'll have to give him up.
No.
He's been before the magistrate. He's got his order.
What exactly is the difficulty, Mr. Skirl?
The time payment, sir. They filed in their time payments on one of my pegs.
You mean to say you sell Gloucester old spots on the installment plan?
Well, they're mostly for selling out right to the gentry. They suit you very nicely, sir, if I may say so. These Hoobins bit off more than I could chew when they paid a deposit on one of them. But now I'm going to take my peg.
One moment, Mrs. Skirl. I'm interested in what you say, and I believe a Gloucester old spot would suit me very well. I imagine this will cover the sum owing to you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you kindly. I wish you joy of the pig, sir. I'll be taking my leave, then.
We're well rid of that skull. I didn't at all care for the man. And now let's look at the creature we've rescued from you.
Hey, peace, woman! There's nothing to getting out. Come on out, too. Come out on it and show this end.
Why? He was here all the time. I'll learn you, you beastly little brat, pretending to be chased to a waxman. Hey, where's the pig? Where's Skull's pig?
I said breakfast, dinner, supper. Breakfast, dinner, supper.
Well, well. How did all this happen? Come on, I assure you, you have nothing to fear.
Oh, we were frightened.
Frighted? What frightened you?
This! Just thrown in at winter.
Something has happened at Tipping Place. They will take the boy again, hide him, a friend. And what does the boy say? What did you make of it?
Mischief.
I'm sure you weren't far wrong. Mm-hmm. And who do you think this message came from?
Fairies.
Oh, you cheeky little imp.
Well, Mrs. Hoobin, I think you can let the boy sleep in his bed again. Whatever happened at Tipping Place had nothing to do with him, so nobody's going to take him. Tomorrow, by the way, it's possible you'll have quite a number of visitors.
Visitors?
Several of them.
Visitors?
Very pleasantly spoken gentlemen who will want to have a lot of talk. Well, talk away, and particularly the boy.
Oh.
But charge them. Well, now we must be going.
Well, I see you on the way, sir.
That boy, Mr. Hoobin, are you his father?
Be I the one that got half-wit?
That's what I'm asking.
Mister, did he ever see a saw?
Dear me, yes.
Would he ask which tooth cut board?
That'll be Gregory Grope.
No doubt dreaming of the Berlin-Constantinople Express.
I just can't make it out at all. It ought to come together.
Of course it ought. Only there's rather a lot to fit in. And you're certain that we're not just investigating a series of practical jokes?
I am. We're investigating murder, and perhaps attempted murder as well.
But you don't murder somebody by persuading him to hide in a pigsty.
There's that hey-ho. An old Mrs. Grope. I suppose you'll agree that you do murder somebody if you persuade her to fall down a well.
But hitherto, old Mrs. Grope's falling down the well never aroused the slightest suspicion of foul play.
I agree. But the point is that Mrs. Grope was Hey-Ho's mother. You can't get away with Hey-Ho.
I shouldn't at all want to attempt anything so disagreeable. But if you're going to hot foot after homicide, you may find Hey-Ho a broken reed. What do you think the doctors will say he died of?
Exposure.
Precisely. And how do you know he didn't die of exposure before he was buried in that grotesque way?
It would still be a crime.
That's very true. A judge would take an uncommonly dark view of it. But how would Ranulph Raven regard it? That is the question.
Ranulph Raven? Oh, I don't understand this Raven business at all. Seems plumb crazy to me. How should he come in?
Because everything that's been happening, and more has been happening than you've heard of yet, is related either closely or vaguely to something or other in Ranulph Raven's books. It's a correspondence so odd that it's hard to recognize. For instance, you yourself have told me the story of some yarn of Ranulph's you once read as a boy, while quite failing to see that it bears a point-by-point resemblance to all this turning-to-stone business of Tiffin Place.
Good Lord.
Why was Sir Mulberry, a notably courageous man, rattled or scared by those idiotic incidents? Because buried somewhere in his mind he had this yarn of Ranulph's. And if the analogy from that yarn, the Medusa's head, continued, it would be his wife, Lady Farmer, who would be overtaken by some uncanny fate at the end.
But all this talk of sorcery.
And now, Hey-Ho. Again, there is a correspondence with the Ranulph Raven story, or something like. But it's not as simple as that. You see, Ranulph Raven's stories sometimes have the appearance of coming true. Now, Hey-Ho.
Wait a minute. Was he proud of this? Did he make a business of it?
Yes. Or at least I fancy so.
So, he would like this notion of a yarn coming true. It would amuse him to think of such a thing happening long after he was dead. And what is happening? What that old clergyman said. Something just like a Ranulph Raven story. And it's happening to his own family. An honest Victorian story of lost heirs. Yes, by heaven, secret marriages. Ranulph was married to Mrs. Grope. And Hey-Ho, therefore, was legitimate. Hey-Ho was married to Mrs. Hoobin. That's it. A perfect Raven yarn. Hannah Hoobin's boy is the legitimate heir of Dream.
Well, well. You mean that there is probably a Raven story that runs on those lines and that it amused Ranulph to plan for its coming true, bang in the next generation of his family?
Exactly. Suppose now the Ravens found out that old Mrs. Grope knows the truth. Perhaps she tried her hand at blackmail. Whereupon she fell down the well.
And then?
Well, the Ravens got busy. Ferreted out the fact that the half-wit too was legitimate. So both he and Hey-Ho had to go.
They had to go. But the boy didn't go. He stopped in a pigsty. As for Hey-Ho, he went all right. But instead of having an accident which might get two or three lines in a local rag, he dies in conditions so fantastic that tomorrow morning every national paper will very likely be splashing them. And the last thing the Ravens would want is publicity that would draw attention to their father. And that is just what Hey-Ho's death will do. Yours is as ingenious a theory as a colleague has ever presented me with. I congratulate you on it sincerely. But it won't do. Not only are the bits not built in...
Needles, Mr. Appleby. The needles put into the haystack to serve as red herrings.
I don't think so, for the simple reason they're not red herrings. They're spotlights, and every one leads us back to Ranulph Raven and his stories.
Well, there'll be a spotlight on us, sure enough. Let's hope we cut a decent figure in it. Which means finding the villain of the piece and laying him by the heels.
We may find him, but I doubt whether we shall lay him by the heels.
Be hard to tell just what you mean by that.
What if the villain of the piece died last night?
Hey-ho. How in the world could he be responsible for all this? If so, he's escaped justice, all right.
Undoubtedly. except perhaps the poetic kind.
No, Mr. Rappleby, that's another queer saying. You really think Heyho was responsible for all those freaks?
I wouldn't mind betting that you'll be convinced of it before the night's over. Do you think you could take me back to Dream?
Mm. 7:30. You'll be glad to get back to a bit of dinner and the young lady, I don't doubt.
Decidedly.
Would you have any idea when you would be getting married?
I haven't discussed the point, but if required to guess, I should say Thursday or Friday.
Is that so now? Only goes to show.
Good Lord, what's that?
What?
Well, the glow in the sky, man. It looks as if Dream is on fire.
Good heavens, I believe you're right. Here's the avenue. Looks as if we're not the only people who are in a hurry to get to Dream.
And there's another one right behind us. Better let him by, I think.
What's it all in aid of?
Well, whatever it is, it's not a fire.
The whole place is floodlit. There are cars all over the lawn, tents, caravans, film crews. What's going on?
A sensation. That is what is going on. It's not Dream that's being set on fire. It's the tent.
Go on.
Who's his grandmother?
We are virtually under siege. The whole place is overrun by journalists. Billy Bidwell is drunk. Peggy Pitchers has been given 18 pairs of silk stockings. And Mark knocked down a man who got into Judith's studio with a camera.
Good Lord.
And just look at the evening papers. Body in snow. Folklorist tells.
What folklorist?
They mean Billy Bidwell. Listen. The victim once chosen, said Mr. Bidwell, it was only a question of waiting for a heavy fall of snow. Then they would Saturn. And just listen to this, Alfie. Dream voyages, grisly end. Young sculptress's ordeal.
Sculptress? That should please Judith. Good Lord! Haystack refugees find Heyho rigid.
Yes, I should have told you that Judith has announced that she is going to be married to you on Wednesday. Everard approves, but Clarissa says that we must insist on the Archbishop of Canterbury's imposing a decent delay. I congratulate you most heartily, and I hope that you will be very happy. If, that is, you can survive headlines like Half-Naked Girl Finds Frozen Coachman. Oh, can't something be done about all this?
I'm afraid not. You see, this is a mere mild beginning. Just what rather conservative local journalists were able to get off this morning. The people camped outside now are the experts. And in the morning papers, you'll see them really begin to exploit the business. It will be a first-class sensation.
My dear fellow, my dear John, I'm extremely glad to see you back. This is a very sudden decision of Judith, but I assure you we're all very pleased. Though Clarissa may take a little humouring, I think I ought to say. And here's Mark, who will no doubt find Judith for you. Mark, my dear chap, here's your brother-in-law waiting for you to say the right thing.
I knew this was going to happen. The way she looked at him in that railway carriage.
Yes, I felt rather like an unhewn block of soapstone.
Still, let them marry, by all means. He seems quite a decent chap.
Yes, quite. But now, Mark, if you would be so good as to point John in the direction of Judith's studio...